Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to the Amateur Otaku Podcast. How's everybody doing out there? I'm Brandon, Monkey D. Raffy, joined with Mike, Jamie, and the Mad Dog Isaac for another week of amazing anime content, thoughts, and conversations. Special topic of the day is Hayao Miyazaki's latest opus, The Boy and the Heron. But before we jump into our main topic and talk about this very, very interesting film, how you guys been, guys? What's going on? What have you guys been watching? What have you guys been doing? What have you guys been playing? What is going on with everybody?
It's been going okay. I've been watching Jujutsu Kaisen. Also gave up on Jujutsu Kaisen. We'll talk about that another day.
Stop. You cannot start the conversation by stating that you've been watching Jujutsu Kaisen and you just gave up on it. You got to spill, bro. It doesn't work that way.
Okay.
It's so, anime spoilers. So
it's not.
FYI.
I'm not spoiling anything.
It doesn't matter about spoilers. If the episode's been out and you're a fan of Jujutsu Kaisen, you haven't seen it, it's your own damn fault. That's how I feel.
Okay, fair enough.
But for fair warning, this is a Miyazaki video, so that would be really crazy if you got spoiled on JJK here. So I get it. But yeah, Brandon's right. If you haven't watched the show, you're at an anime podcast.
We furlough otaku, so I got to look you in the eye, and I got to tell you, it's your own damn fault.
Seriously.
Love you.
we actually never talked JJK here on the podcast ever. I don't think we just kept putting it off. So, full thoughts, I guess. Season one was cool. Didn't love it. Didn't hate it. I loved the movie though. So I'm like, let me stick with this franchise a little bit longer because I really did love the movie and how they approached that story. Then we get into season two and we have the prequel type of thing for Gojo, and that was okay. It didn't grab me as much as I would want it to. And at that point, I'm like, this franchise just isn't for me because I've never connected with any of these characters on any emotional level. And so for this Shibuya incident to work and for me to feel the pain that they want me to feel for these characters, and I feel like I don't know them, it's just kind of like violence, death, destruction, just for the sake of violence, death, and destruction. And so it's like I'm not invested enough and I don't care enough. Whereas a show like AOT, we just reviewed a few weeks back, right? They hit you with that similar feeling, but the difference is I did care about Armin, Mikasa, and Eren like from the jump. So it was easier for me to see those struggles with those characters. And I don't care about Itadori. And I think that's why the movie worked. And that's why the show never gripped me. Aside from that, Scott Pilgrim was cool.
I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
This is nothing to... As someone that is 100% caught up with the book, I have to agree that every single complaint that you have is valid. I at least had a good connection with the characters. And I think I'm the kind of reader or the kind of watcher that more than anything, I love the world and find it interesting and brutal. You know what I mean? So whatever happens within that world, I want to know what's going on. I want to know what's been done. I want to know what moves the power players are making. And I think I'm still enjoying the book because in those terms, as the book goes on, it gets more interesting and more intriguing and more complex. But I get where you're coming from, because that is not what you needed to truly enjoy it. You needed to care about the characters. You needed to care about the interactions. You needed you needed the events to affect them in a way that also affected you. And I can see how all of that doesn't really happen.
I feel like if Shibuya happened, like if we had another season before Shibuya, I would feel differently. But I never felt that connection to this specific group of characters in this show. And the I think that's why the Gojo prequel works. That's why the movie worked, because it's like, we're going to establish the relationships between these people in this world where...
But not the main characters, because why, right?
That's kind of the complaint I have with Demon Slayer a little bit. Like, I feel like I know Tanjiro. I can really relate to Tanjiro. Shit. I want to know more about Inosuke and Zenitsu, and I just never get that. Like, I feel like I know very little about them, but I still do care about them because they have just, like, very strong personalities.
Yeah.
But with Jujutsu Kaisen, it's definitely harder for me to connect with some of those characters. Even though, unlike Mike, I do feel sad that bad things are happening to people that I feel like they didn't deserve to have happen to them.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's also like, okay. It's like when Boruto died in Attack on Titan. It's like, that's very sad. I feel bad for that guy. Wish I spent a little bit more time with him so I get to know him a bit more.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm sad in the sense that these characters I'm seeing have bad things happen to them. Like, there was so much potential for them to be more interesting. Yeah. And so that's what makes me more sad, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm also like, I'm not a huge, like, I watch anime for the fights kind of person either. So Jujutsu Kaisen season one also didn't really grab me. Like, I'm like, oh, you know, it's like beautifully animated, really cool fights, but who is this person? Why do I care that they're fighting somebody else? You know,
it's interesting that you mentioned Demon Slayer, though, because I feel like the difference, and that's really the big difference for me, is that Demon Slayer's first 26 episodes was about Tanjiro, mm-hmm. and the effect that initial attack and his sister becoming a demon had on him, and his journey of I'm going to become a demon slayer and save my sister was enough to grip me in, where it's like, even if I don't like Zenitsu and Inosuke, he's just kind of a hothead with a boar mask, like, I care about that kid. And I never felt that way about Itadori. It's not that he's a bad character, he just never got fleshed out the way I needed him to for the story to grip me.
Yeah.
Valid complaints.
Outside of that, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I finished watching the Yu Yu Hakusho anime, so now watching the live action show, I probably have more critiques than people who haven't watched the anime in a while wouldn't have. And what else have I been watching? Oh, I just watched Gran Turismo today. Not an anime, but it was fun. Felt anime-ish in a way.
I do want to ask a question. Mm-hmm. As someone that has Jujutsu Hakusho very high on his list of things that he really enjoys, and having and moving up the watch list, like, I've been thinking about watching the live action, because I don't want to spoil. I want to make it as simple as a question as I can. Do you feel that the same type, I don't want to say level, but the same type of care that they took with One Piece, you can feel a little bit on Jujutsu Hakusho, or is it more loose?
I don't think that they took the same kind of care, particularly when it comes to the storytelling. I feel like the world and the outfits and those kind of things, it was more easy for Yu Yu Hakusho to kind of
like the visuals.
Like, yeah, it was more easy for them beautiful to nail villains, because, you know, they're just schoolboys wearing schoolboy outfits for the most part.
I'm upset that Kuwabara does not have her hair.
I kind of wish she also had red hair, but it's still going for like a delinquent kind of look. So I'm like, yes, you know, it's fine. But yeah, as far as the story goes, like, the first episode literally crams like maybe 6 or 7 regular anime episodes into that first one. And I was not expecting that, and I was not happy about that. So now watching episode 2, I feel like they did kind of slow down with their consumption of however many anime episodes. It's still moving rather quickly, but It's fine. It's not horrible.
I've got a question, though, because you started this by saying somebody who hasn't recently watched Yu Yu Hakusho may feel differently. Did it feel like it was rushing through those plot lines? Or were you just like, hey, I kind of wish we fleshed out this episode a bit more because I love this part of the story? Did it feel like it was a natural like progression of the story in this version, at least?
Yes, Jamie, he just asked you 5 questions in one. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
feel like, I don't know, it's tough for me to kind of like separate the two experiences.
Yeah, because there's bad pacing, and then there's you didn't do what the anime and manga did. Those are technically two different complaints.
There's truth there.
I feel like maybe it's a mix of both. Like, I don't think this is a
which spoiler. Is not good either.
Yeah.
That might be the worst possible outcome.
Because in reality, if you have really bad pacing, but they're trying to cover everything, mm-hmm. you can kind of give them a pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if they're just like not knowing what they want to do.
Because like there are certain things that they have skipped over that are actually very important a few episodes down that I'm like, how are they going to like put these back together? And then also, I don't think this is a spoiler because it happens in episode 1, but Yusuke dies and he realized that he died. So then he kind of has to like deal with that whole situation. And something that he says is kind of like a delinquent kid, like, oh, nobody will miss me, you know? Like, it's better. I'm probably better off dead than alive.
That's a big plot point
It is a big plot point in the anime. In this show, it's kind of like, I feel like a lot of the emotional moments that happen where he sees, like, the way that these different people are reacting to his death, it's not like they don't glaze over it, but it doesn't feel as impactful. Like it's kind of like, oh, Yusuke's dead. Yusuke's alive. Yay. Like, you know, I don't feel, okay. I gotta watch it. So yeah, the first episode for me, they did not nail that emotional beat. I don't think anything really hits as hard for a little while in the anime after that, so they'll probably be okay. But emotions wise, that's where they're kind of losing me a little bit. But yeah, that's my short review of the first.
I'm gonna give it a shot. But
see, yeah, I encourage you to try because I actually looked on Twitter to see like, am I crazy? Like, am I the only person that thinks this? And like, there are a lot of people that really like it.
So I appreciate that you've helped me temper my expectations.
Yeah.
So thank you.
For what it's worth, every review I've seen has given me like 7 out of 10. So it's like most people say it's good, but not great. Like One Piece, right?
Yeah.
So. Well, that's the thing though. One Piece has set up.
Yeah.
They've done a thing.
Oda and the crew over there did not need to go that hard. They ruined it for everyone else. I'm looking at you, My Hero Academia. I can't believe that's happening. Anyway,
but yeah, I would still encourage people to give it a
try. I still can't
believe
that Naruto's happening.
Yeah, it's a little frightening. It's a little frightening.
Like actual little kids doing this. A child. So, Isaac, what have you watched or seen lately? What are you doing with your life apart from staring with us in the silence of the picture that we're looking at?
Holding a Nintendo Switch all day.
Well,
truth.
I mean, when it comes to anime, I've been trying to focus on. It's pretty much been Spy Family and Spy Family, One Piece, and the. Now I can't speak. And Undead Unluck, which it's something.
How's that?
It's just wonderfully insane. That's the manga is. And it's a shame that, honestly, it's a shame that we kind of haven't talked about it more in the podcast here, but I feel that it's worth maybe covering the first season once the second core has ended. Because
the dub just started this week, too, so I might jump in now when I'm on vacation.
Yeah. And, nice. Well... That's pretty much what I have done regarding anime. We also have the weird, Wonka plus movie about Stockholm's bloodbath event that happened a long time ago. And we saw the movies back to back, which was just...
Which one did you see first?
Well, which movies did you see?
Wonka, and then a movie about Stockholm's bloodbath.
I feel like they played that in the wrong order.
The question is this. Yeah. Did you enjoy your chocolate?
Wonka was at least cute.
A little salty.
I didn't. It just felt weird that the second movie in question was about the Swedish, one of the darkest parts in Swedish history, and every actor was talking.
They wanted to make sure that you felt every single emotion in the emotional spectrum.
I guess so.
That's what they wanted.
They speak English in British, Danish, and Swedish pronouncement, and I missed. Danish and Swedish pronouncement makes sense. It was Danish that invaded it all, but Brits, British? Why? But I digress. But, that's crazy. And yeah, I should... I'm after with...
I find it fascinating that you went into a theater, and everything started like, how cute. And then everything, and like, why? Like,
we went on something called Film Salons, Los Svaka Witches. They show two movies that they have chosen in secret that don't know who they are before they play. And the only thing that you really know is that they haven't been released in theaters, Swedish theaters yet. That's the only thing you know. So it's sort of like a gacha game kind of deal.
We do those here too. I don't think I've ever had a double feature though, where you don't know what two movies you're going into. That's kind of terrifying.
It was when it was called Lucia Movie Night. It was three. Going from midnight before, from the night of the 12th to the 13th. It started about midnight, ended about 6 a.m. So. But.
Couldn't do that.
I digress.
Yeah, that's enough
for me. I digress. So, but when it comes to Jujutsu Kaisen, I saw. Now, when we even speak about it, I can, first off, I can honestly understand what Mike and Jamie is coming from, someone that collects the manga and is up to speed with the manga. And I would even say that they
should. I'm so surprised that we all agree.
Yeah.
Right? It's a controversial take if you think about it.
Truth.
They should have at least one story arc. Before the Shibuya incident, in my book. Also, before I end this, and we might as well go to the movie, Yuta is better than Itadori.
So, without starting to bring pitchforks and spitfire, so I haven't been watching that much. I have watched a couple of anime. Like, I've watched... I started season two of The Ancient Magus Bride, so I'm happy.
I need to watch season two.
I'm glad that I spend more time with Chize, and the Magus. I started this anime out of a customer at my job that recommended it. He mentioned a bunch of stuff, and I started watching the show called Kingdom of Ruin.
That sounds familiar.
It's a lot. Like, it's a lot. Like, the premise is a lot. Like, so practically you have like this, so God, whatever this entity is, created humans and witches. And witches are like the representatives of God in a way to help humans flourish on Earth. But And they're super nice. They're like, they love VW everybody. And like, they love humans. They want to do what God wants, blah, 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 right? But humans get resentful because they don't have access to powers and magic. Only witches do.
Sounds
so
like
they
humans.
Grow, so they grow technologically and then kill all the witches.
And the premise
is that there's this one witch that's an exile that has a human apprentice. And this witch is captured with the apprentice. The apprentice sees them killing them. And now the apprentice escapes from her prison 10 years later and has vowed to kill every human on Earth. And it's... So for the first 5 episodes, is this revenge, bloodied madness of just somewhat shoddy animation and just revenge craziness. And it's crazy because it now in episode like 7, we have a story that has depth. And I'm like, it took a while. So I kind of want to stick with it. So I'm already like 8 episodes in. But I don't think it's anything that's going to change the world.
Yeah.
Interesting nonetheless.
Did the slow burn feel like it made sense in hindsight? Like, oh, we start off kind of slow with these first 5 episodes.
Well, I think they wanted to get all the blood out of the way. Like the emphasis on the hatred and where the hatred comes from both parties in a way. Because now that you're beyond that, they can start telling it a story per se.
They had to establish the lore. Okay.
Yeah, but they took a long time to establish it. And at least it was very action heavy and interesting, but I can see where a lot of people might just abandon it after the first 2 episodes. Because you have to like kind of wanna give it a chance, like for real, you know?
Yeah.
So I did that.
I'm looking, before you move on, I'm just looking at the mangaka who made this series. So far, according to Google, this is the only book series they've ever worked on. So that rough start might be because this is pretty much their first manga. And so they kind of found their footing later on, it seems like.
Yeah. Now, I do want to ask this question to you, Isaac, primarily. Have they announced an anime for Sakamoto Days?
It's a rumored... But I haven't heard anything official.
Because I am almost caught up with the book. And ha! Damn! I forgot.
I know.
Like, I forgot.
It's amazing.
How... I want to say this. If you guys want to read great non-superhero action, non-like power-based action, like... Because the cool thing about Sakamoto Days is that it's essentially, but there's no magic system. There's no power system. It's just like Assassins, John Wick, kind of out of the world, but it's like comedy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of comedy to it. But this guy knows how to draw action. Like there's this one scene that I saw in between a car chase where a guy jumps off a bike. There's this car that blew up or something. It's in the air like this. The guy jumps off the bike, goes in one door, goes through the car, goes out the other door, and then jumps on top of the bad guys. It's amazing action.
I mean,
I need the anime now.
First off, I would if you do a TLDR, I would say that Sakamoto Days is as if imagine an anime, a manga. That is basically John Wick if he kept his family. We talked about this manga ways back.
But I think that's underselling it. I found it. Imagine John Wick with a family in the world of Spy Family.
I would say this
in terms of the lightheartedness and the type of comedy that it uses.
Yeah, fair enough.
It has that warmth to it. And the main character's fat. So
I just for clarity, it is Jump Festa weekend, by the way. So announcements are happening all weekend. Sakamoto Days had their panel and people are mad because they thought an anime was gonna be announced and it was not. So now there's still no anime announcement.
I also read a few chapters of the manga and enjoy it, so I would recommend that.
Sakamoto Days is amazing.
Have been heavily rumored for a month that it was going to get one, or almost a year at this point.
I do find it crazy that but it shouldn't surprise me though, because even an anime, like a manga, like Kaiju Number 8, the anime was what announced 2.5 years ago. And it's just and it just got a release date like 2 days ago, which is going to be April or something, which is nuts. It looks great, and it's Toho, so I know it's going to be great. But that's pretty crazy. So, are you guys ready to talk about a wonderful movie about mothers?
Interesting description.
It does. So let's do this, guys. What we decided to end the year with Miyazaki.
They needed time in the kitchen to get Kaiju Number 8 right. I agree, Eric Winder.
Eric Winder, that is not a bad comment. You're right. And it looks great. And Kaiju Number 8 right now in the book, whoever's reading the book, it is going crazy. Now, we're going to talk about this film. Hayao Miyazaki has come back from retirement for like the fourth time. And he came back and he's dropping bars in this movie, The Boy and the Heron. And he got, and not only that, he got the team back together. Because Studio Ghibli himself, he even brought Joe Hisaishi back to do the score. Which they go back all the way to My Neighbor Totoro. And I think Hisaishi also did the one for Nausicaa, The Valley of the Wind, which is one of the first films that Miyazaki did right before he opened Studio Ghibli.
Yep. That's correct. Movie. We reviewed that here, Isaac and I.
Yeah.
Now, The Boy and the Heron is a dreamscape-filled story about a young man named Mahito as he struggles to find his place in the world, in his family, after the death of his mother and the introduction of his dad's new partner. And it's not much as a coming of age, but also more of a movie about grief and handling grief. Mm-hmm. Whether deciding to handle grief or not. And I find it very interesting. I feel that I haven't seen it enough to give it a solid rating, but I have a lot of thoughts and I'm excited to have this conversation with all of you guys. I think I was the only one that watched it subbed, right? Am I the only one that watched it in the original Japanese cast?
Yes.
Ooh, we got 2-2. Go three. Team! That happened a lot.
Well, I only had the options of watching it subbed, so yeah. So I would have.
I'm literally the only person who's watched this movie in dub. By the way,
I don't understand how life works. But yeah, we watched the film. I watched it in IMAX and had a blast. Did anybody else watch it in IMAX or in Dolby?
No, I didn't.
I watched it in Dolby.
It was really. I wished we had those Dolby's. Two in the last terrace where I live, but unfortunately, no.
Now
it was just a regular screen.
I think this is the kind of film, Isaac, that it's appropriate to start with you. Facts. Well done, sir. Well done. By the way, the little bit that I've heard of Robert Pattinson doing the voice of the Heron, it's crazy.
Yeah, you know, like, I didn't even know like who the cast was for the English dub. And reading that he was the Heron, I was like, wait, I might have to watch this.
This cast is stacked. It's amazing.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
All I know about Florence.
Willem Dafoe was in this movie, you. Right?
What was that?
Willem Dafoe, Robert Pattinson, Karen Fukuhara.
I thought that Willem Dafoe was going to do the Heron.
Right?
You see what I'm saying? Because the voice that he's doing, I'm not saying that he's doing the Dafoe impression, but like everybody knows the false Green Goblin. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. there was a little bit of that energy there. So when they said, no, that's Robert Pattinson doing the hair, and I was like,
I don't know what was going on with Robert Pattinson for this dub, but I was like, he could have just came in. He could have voiced the dad. He could have voiced any other yep. side character. But it's just like, no, I'm going to be this grungy old bird. And it was crazy.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So
he is something of a voice actor himself.
So Willem Dafoe. So I'm looking at this right now. So the voice yeah. that Willem Dafoe did, he did the voice of the pelican that was dying near the toilet. That was Willem Dafoe. That's Willem all he did.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe, Dave Bautista, they had roles, but they were more like glorified cameos. It was really Florence
that is,
Pugh,
no, but
Karen
that's great.
Fukuhara.
That's great. Yeah. That is great, though.
They were fantastic, I will say. Yes. Great performances from everyone.
So correct me if I'm wrong. So it was Bruce Wayne, the DeMichael, right? No, that's not Bruce Wayne. Who's that kid from? Where's that kid from? Remind me.
I've got a cast guide. He's from Disney's Newsies, the musical. He's also in No Hard Feelings. The Jennifer Lawrence movie.
He's the lead in that. No, actually, you know what?
No, he's
I
not.
Don't know. I don't
this
know.
Is a, this I'm... is a boy. That would be very bad if he was the lead of No Hard Feelings.
Yes. Yes. That would have been bad for everybody. But yeah, like this film is very interesting. And what I wanted to say is I think it's fitting that yeah. for a longtime anime viewer, and with being that you were the first person I ever talked Ghibli with, Isaac, I want to know your thoughts first. And I want to know where this movie falls in terms of what you've seen from Ghibli, not knowing that you know all in the films. So I want to know your take first. What are your thoughts?
Well, for me, I would argue that this is easily, I'd argue, top five of the Ghibli movies. I wouldn't say it's my favorite.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So Ghibli movies or Miyazaki or Hayao movies?
Studio Ghibli.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Because I can't recall what movie in Miyazaki, every movie Miyazaki has done in it. Miyazaki hasn't done every movie within the Studio Ghibli, so I rather say Studio Ghibli than the Miyazaki movies here.
Fair.
Yes, FYI.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
So, for me, it's sort of like, it's an excellent... I wouldn't be surprised, knowing... I know it's going to sound a bit... dark and all that jazz, but it's sort of like I can't believe this is a movie where he has done to processing maybe his feeling about his mother's death or another's family member's death, while also coming to terms that I'm not going to be able to do this for 20 plus more years, most likely. So it feels it's sort of like him doing a therapeutic piece in two different senses in that regard. And it's interesting that he, how should I put it? It's sort of like the world where he visit his mother again, even though spoilers, is the mother of the main character's die, and his father.
Oh, we're spoiling the whole movie, guys. I want you to know.
Former, his sort of
very
like
late
aunt,
for that disclaimer, isn't it? But I appreciate the attempt.
if I'm not mistaken, it was over a month since I saw it about now. So, but I digress. And when and the fact that he went back, it's sort of like, how should I put it? We all pretty much. We all have probably had a feeling of, I want to have some last words with insert person there. I just wish I could have done insert thing there before insert thing passed away, with a person, a pet, or whatever passed away.
Right.
And that is sort of what I felt, that this side of a world was symbolic of. Especially when they spoke about how these little energy balls, or whatever you want to call them, was the wada, souls wada. Of the... Wada wada, thank you, I forgot the name. But sort of like how they symbolized humans that have yet to be born, kind of deal. And you can argue that birds sort of like... Sorry, I'm going to be dramatic, but... it symbolizes people having not being able to have birth for X amount for insert reason here. So again, it's a sort of like a symbolic way of looking at life while having a being therapeutic of I would have wanted to say this or blah 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 blah. Maybe I'm all over the place right now, but this is the things I think of when I think about the movie. And I
don't know. You're good. I find it interesting. Like, I feel like Isaac created the most depressing Mad Lib I've ever heard. I'll just like insert noun, insert place, insert verb, adjective.
Give me a name.
I definitely agree that this, and to Arkwinder's comment, I'm glad you put that, you know, a husband is tended to marry the sister of the deceased wife, because I was thinking, like, that is so bizarre to think, like, yeah. Oh, you know.
And that mostly only happened if that other daughter did not have a husband.
Yeah. Well, I assume so. That would be weird.
But
sorry, we're getting divorced. I'm getting married to somebody else.
Yeah, but go ahead. I don't want to stop. Go.
I feel like I need to see this movie again to fully process it. There's just like so much to think about. And definitely as like, I don't want to call myself a visual person, but somebody that I feel like the art direction and like the style of, especially like Studio Ghibli movies, is something that's like what I take it on the first go around. And then watching it again, I'm like, okay, like now we're getting deeper. Like, What was the story actually trying to say? What is Hayao trying to say to me? With this, this was definitely a story about like grief and dealing with grief and kind of just talking about life in general, because you know these things do happen, and it's kind of like how you deal with it is what makes you like who you are. It was really interesting to see Ahito kind of go on this journey, especially with all of the like fantastical creatures and people that he happened to meet, and even like his own, like kind of like another version of his mother in a way. So to have some kind of closure to be able to open up to his new his stepmother, that was really like, it was like beautifully told story, I think.
There's something that Isaac said that I think it really captures a lot of the vision, maybe I would say, that I somewhat agree with. Is I don't necessarily agree with the whole him trying to flush something out artistically in a way. Like he doesn't, like he won't have another chance to express himself artistically in this way again, maybe, or in a long time, or you know, I don't see that much, but I do see the idea of him kind of pushing the metaphorical list of lines out the window and just use whatever comes to mind to touch about the subject, right? Like he literally feels like he's going all out of it. It does feel that the movie goes out of his way to provide excessive imagery for everything going on, mm-hmm. or for everything being suggested, you know, or for everything that's being emotionally not talked about.
but we know it's going on emotionally, you know, like, which we all know, everybody that's watched Ghibli movies, very few of them are about the dialogue, and it's more about the artistry. How do we find ways to show and not tell, you know, especially using the imagery, the world, the fantasy. That's really what he mostly does. I think the only movie that I've seen from him, the only two ones that I've seen that it levels the dialogue heavy storytelling are when Marnie's was there, which is a more modern movie. I'll bite with a bit of fantasy, and Up from Poppy Hill, which take place in Grave of the Fireflies, which all take place in very real settings. Like here, you have real settings, but the real settings are not really what matter. What matter is the fantasy that occurs. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's also another take in the Totoro world, kind of, because the whole thing with My Neighbor Totoro is these kids having this amazing, fantastical adventure with these creatures of the forest as they're getting acclimated to their new place where they're living, you know? So I do see a lot of that. And a lot of the imagery is crazy.
It is. It's also like, I've never seen a Studio Ghibli movie on the big screen. So first time doing that.
I've always wanted to go when they have the festival, because they have the festival every year and they bring pretty much almost a good selection of movies back. And I've never had a chance to go and watch. So I think I have to make it a point to go at least.
I watched My Neighbor Totoro for the first time on the big screen at one of those screens that they do.
How was it?
That was amazing. It was great. Such a great experience. So I'm glad they do that every year. It's a really cool way to experience those for the first time too.
So Mike, how was The Boy and the Heron? You watched it today. So
yeah. Crazy.
How was you guys, the experience?
You guys talking about you need more time to process it. I watched this movie like 3 hours ago, max. So it's a lot. It's a lot of emotion.
And he has a synopsis. He has a draft. He has an article. He's done it all.
The fun facts.
Actually, yeah. So Isaac's right. Like Miyazaki talked about this movie and he said that this is almost autobiographical from him. So this is a very personal story. To him. Remember, the original name for this movie was How Do You Live? And it got changed to The Boy and the Heron for our sake. That's the English title. The Japanese title is still How Do You Live? And it.
So this is that movie.
Yeah. Same movie.
I didn't know that. I just learned something new. And this movie makes more the sense in the world now.
You did have the fun facts. You're right. Yes. no, but
downplayed, Mike. Just you know.
No, but seriously, like everything you guys have said is pretty much spot on. Miyazaki's using a lot of imagery from like Alice in Wonderland, right? Of like telling that story of this kid is missing his mother, and him having to deal with that emotion and that pain and how to move on. Which again, why the original title makes so much sense. It's How Do You Live After Such a Heartbreaking Tragedy, right? Like his dad's moved on, his mom is gone, he's alone, and he's looking for a reason to continue on with his life in the state that it is. And I think that's why the ending of this movie, the resolution, is so impactful, where he has the realization of, I do have friends and family and people I care about and that care about me. And that kind of pushes him to resolve within himself that pain he was dealing with. So I think, like Isaac was saying earlier, this is why this was the final Miyazaki movie, even though like all creatives, he's like, yeah, I've got a couple more ideas, so I might still make one or two more movies, because writers never stop writing, if we're going to be real. So like, even if that was his intent, he's not going to retire unless he runs out of ideas.
Apart from being his intent or not, he'd retired like 5 times.
Right.
So the guy can't come back and say, oh, I retired. It's like, buddy, we don't believe you no more.
No. All right. Like, see you next time.
You just taking a break. You'll be back.
That's like saying my dog ate my homework, buddy. Come on. That's it.
No, but like I feel like the reason they kind of pitched it that way is because this movie is probably the last thing he wants to say. Because again, it's
autobiographical in a sense, in a way, in his interpretation of it at least. So like, if this is the last movie he ever made, he's probably very content with that, because this is a message, an idea he wanted to get out. And I think it works for the most part. It's very long. This is a 2-hour movie, and the pacing in the first act, you can tell Miyazaki was slowly setting things up for that inevitable payoff down the road. So it's a lengthy one, but I think it's a really good film. I have to sit with it a bit more to soak it all in. The voice performances were fantastic. The animation is beautiful. It's probably the best looking Ghibli movie.
Yes.
Which
is, can we talk about that, please? Yes. Can we talk about, so here's what surprised me the most about what you just said. Yes. I find it fascinating. We've talked about Makoto Shinkai movies a lot here, right? And one of the things that we all love on Shinkai movies is that its style is unique, but also it pushes the boundaries of the mixture of digital animation and hand-drawn animation. It finds this perfect place between these two worlds to give us something that we've never seen before, that we love, that feels real, but we know it's anime and it's a cartoon, right? I was blown away, not surprised, blown away with how Studio Ghibli was able to find a way to make their movie look even more artsy. Yeah. With digital elements.
And it still feels like a Ghibli movie. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
Disney reinvented themselves when they started going to like 3D animation. It's like, that's not what the 90s movies look like. It's a completely different thing. Like, you still feel at its core Ghibli, which I think is
well, cool. That's the thing. It all feels hand drawn. Yeah. But they've used the digital effects and lighting and coloring to make it feel like art pieces. The grass, the water, it looks like Monet paintings. It's crazy. Like, because on one side, we appreciate the digital mastery in the Shinkai movies. But here, it's like, how does it feel drawn, but it doesn't look drawn? You see what I'm saying? Like, it has the feel of a drawn film. And it has the film of the drawn environments. But you have the zoom in and zoom out and panning of modern media. And you have the backgrounds that don't feel like Final Fantasy VII from PlayStation 1, where it's just a picture and the little pixelated thing moving around. You know what I'm saying? Which you kind of have a little bit of that in certain things if you don't have everything completely in a very consistent and completed art style. But they found a way to do it in this film. And I was so amazed.
Yeah, how
great it looked.
That's another reason why I need to rewatch. I feel like I was looking at the art and being like, so how did they do that? Like, no,
well, as an artist yourself, right? You're thinking like, how did they be? Yeah, like that was one of those things that blew my mind from the beginning.
And this is why I watch it in dub, because I can't be looking down and missing all the beautiful pictures coming by.
Just learn Japanese, Mike. Easy.
Oh, yeah, super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
No, not at all.
So, but yeah, it's amazing. It blew my mind. It changed my life. Like, that's one of the reasons why I want to watch again. I mean, to me, to say this is my favorite Ghibli movie, I don't want to say that. But I the amount of admiration that I feel that of what they were able to capture on screen with their art, they did not lose their identity, but they pushed to a new, like similar. I feel that in a world where Across the Spider-Verse exists, in a world where Mutant Mayhem exists, in a world where Suzume exists, Studio Ghibli still found a way to evolve but create their own little corner.
Animation
and it's cinema. and it's fascinating. Yes, and it's fascinating. And for that alone, like that's where I would be like wow, this is amazing. This mm-hmm. is something else. This is something epic. And I blew my mind.
That like visually, it also visually and story wise, it does feel like the final Miyazaki movie because it feels like a culmination of all of the ideas and stories that he's told up to this point.
Like 40 years worth of stories,
right? And you feel it's funny because it's 100th anniversary of Disney, right? It's like they didn't do much to celebrate that 100 year anniversary, whereas this feels like it's a celebration of all things that makes Ghibli. Just even story-wise, it has a lot in common with Spirited Away, and I thought that was very interesting. Of if he was going to walk away from this movie, it's echoing similar themes and ideas and character designs from other movies that he's done before, and I thought that was very interesting.
He's very big with younger characters dealing with turning points in their lives.
Yeah.
Like it happens with Ashitaka in Princess Mononoke. It happens with Kiki. It happens with the Chihiro, which is I think is the one from Spirited Away. Yeah. It happens with Mahito, you know, like that's one of the that's a big thing for him. And I love the story because no matter how confused we were with all the visuals, and some of the visuals are very mature. Like a lot of this, like this wasn't your average kid's Ghibli movie.
It feels like a lucid dream.
this movie feels like it was made for the generations that were raised on Ghibli movies, not for, like, I wouldn't take my kid to see this as the first Ghibli movie. Like, not that it's a bad film for them to watch, but I wouldn't start them off here. I'd rather start them off with maybe Spirited Away, that even because it has a lot of those fantastic
elements. I would say My Neighbor Totoro should be the first, it's the optimal first one.
I'm thinking like a kid that's 8, 9, or 10. Like Totoro, you can throw to a kid that's 4. You know what I mean? Like I would, this is the kind of movie that I would see with a teenager. Like if I had a kid and he was 16, 17, I would take him to go see The Boy and Heron. Because it's a movie that's made for people that want to talk about it after. You know what I mean? Like it has that depth into it.
I am kind of curious on what everybody's perspective is since we've talked about like the story and like kind of like the depth of it and kind of needing to, I guess, reflect on it a little bit more. One of the things that we talked about at some point on the about anime news is the fact that Miyazaki didn't want there to be like a lot of marketing for this movie and kind of just wanted people to like go into it and see it and just, I guess, like make their own thoughts in that way. Do you guys, like, how do you feel about that decision now coming out of it? Like, do you feel like it was the right decision, or it's like, I don't know why he couldn't have marketed this or couldn't have marketed that? Or
see, I didn't know that that was a thing.
Yeah. When this was coming out, there were like no trailers, no posters. They didn't market this movie at all in Japan either. Like Americans, I think they did that for,
I mean, we got a trailer like 2 months ago though.
Right,
I avoided it for that reason, though.
They released the trailer because I think they realized, hey, to get butts in seats around the world, you need to put out a trailer. Whereas Japan is like, last Miyazaki movie, I'm there. I don't need to know anything else. Like they could, that marketing tactic could have worked there. It doesn't translate here. So fair.
Similar to the whole name change,
right?
Like you need like a more inviting name as opposed to just
As somebody who hasn't watched the trailers, because I was purposely avoiding it, because that's what Ghibli wanted us to do, I think it was...
Sorry, Hayao. I never heard you say it, so I watched the trailer.
That wasn't his decision, for what it was worth. That was the studio. He's okay, just like, Hayao, I kind of wish we could market it.
I'm not going to ask, I'm going to apologize.
Right. He doesn't need an apology. But
I just don't know how you approach marketing this movie. Because, like, hey, it's about a boy whose mom dies and he's stricken with grief and he gets a stepmom who's his aunt that he doesn't know, who looks exactly like his mom. And that's kind of traumatizing when you think about it in a way.
Well, he knows his aunt. I think they acknowledge in a way that they know this person exists.
He knows that, like, she exists, but she says, I haven't seen you since you're so much bigger since the last time I saw you. So he clearly doesn't have a big connection with her. And she looks identical to his mom. That's what I mean. Like, that's kind of spooky as a kid. That's, you know.
They should have said that they were twin sisters.
Yeah, they didn't acknowledge that. I just assumed they were.
Well, they did acknowledge that she's a younger sister.
They did. They just look very similar. That is the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why I think this, I don't know how you market this movie, because it's just a hard pitch.
Yes.
I mean, I guess you can be like, kid goes to another world, and just leave it vague like that. Yeah. But I don't know. So I think it was probably, I think that's probably why, like, somebody at Ghibli was like, you know, we can just spin this away so we don't have to figure out how to cut a trailer. I think that's kind of what happened.
Mm. Now,
especially since Miyazaki said he didn't, that wasn't his call, you know?
Okay.
I am going to say the trailer is good enough, as someone that watched trailers multiple times. The trailer did a good job to announce that this is a Miyazaki film, that this is not just because it had lettering, but the beats, the way it used the music, like it really created the atmosphere where you go, oh, another Ghibli film. You know, it did have that awe factor, that wow factor, that ooh, I have to see what's on there. I have to put my butt in that seat and I got to watch this. Like, it did create that. So the trailer in that way, I think, did enough to sell it. I don't think this is the kind of movie that you sell by putting a little synopsis in the newspaper. Like, you have to sell it visually, you know, because most of the times we go to Ghibli movies primarily for what we're seeing and then go into the story. Like, I think that's something that's really big with Ghibli movies, at least for me, even though I do enjoy them. I personally feel that one of the strongest attributes that Miyazaki has as a director is to be able to tell a story through ideas as opposed through exposition and traditional storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, so he knows how to express his ideas with the complex figures that he shows. Not necessarily because you have someone giving a speech like Pain and Naruto. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what happens here. Now, can we talk about how brutal and real the real world events of this movie are? Like, because they're very real. Like,
that apart intro from the hurts,
the, not just, but see, yes, the intro, the way he animates fire,
right?
Because like I'm gonna say this, everybody screams about, oh, the water graphics in Horizon, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's fine, that's good. The fire in this movie, like, everybody talks about the rain and Weathering With You. That's fine. The fire in this movie, like, especially in that first shot, buddy, amazing. But every time from that moment that we know that Mahito's mother dies, how that character carries the grief and everything that he does, and you're feeling it every time you look at him. That to me is brutal and crazy, but also, which to me was the strongest theme, right? It's not just the fact that he lost his mother, because it wasn't as much the fact that he missed her, because he did, and that was a big point. But the biggest struggle, I think, that the biggest obstacle that Mahito had was the fact that his life was stuck. He was stuck. And yep. he wasn't living. And he gave up on living.
Right.
And he didn't know how to get unstuck. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody else... Let me finish this thought. I'm going to give you the platform. Everybody else in his life is moving on. His dad is moving on. His aunt, for better or worse, is moving on. You know what I mean? Like, he's physically moving on because you can tell that it's been 2 years and he still has the same face, same clothes. I mean, now that he controls, you know what I'm saying? Like, that imagery that everything's the same with him. He doesn't look different or grown. But you know that he's like the same. Like the whole thing where he hurts himself to not have to go back to school because he doesn't want to deal with real life right now. Like those moments like that are hard and so real, mm-hmm. which again, great that it's a slow burn because those are the important key moments that allow you to survive through the entire dreamscape that comes after, because you can definitely lose what you're trying. It's very easy to lose what he's trying to say, but when you grab that he couldn't move on, and then he gets to because when he gets to the point that I have to do this for my dad because my dad's fiance is in trouble, for him to then say, I'm not here just because of my dad. I have to move on. I have to accept it. And there's a lot, bro. I'm gonna shut up. Isaac,
I'm gonna let Isaac ask his question in a second, but I just want to point out the tagline for this movie is "Death comes to an end and life finds a new meaning." And so I think that's
death comes to an end
and death life comes to an finds end, a new beginning. Sorry, I misspoke. Life finds a new beginning. And I think that perfectly encapsulates Mahito's journey in this movie.
Yep.
And so that, again, this is when knowing the background and history and what goes into a movie kind of makes you appreciate it more, because Miyazaki's trying to tell us something, but if you're just like, I'm going to go watch an animated movie and you get hit with this, you're kind of like, whoa, what am I watching? What just happened? Yep. Anyway. I'll read this comment, and then Isaac can go. The opening scene from this movie perfectly captures the terror of the civilians during that time, World War II. Kind of feels like it belongs in a war movie. Like, it's really well done. Perfectly said.
Yep. Yep. Isaac, you got something. Go.
I was when you mentioned the fire, I was just realizing something. His mother in this other world is sort of like a fire type controlling ability, which makes me wondering,
Bakugo, he's gonna get upset. Don't do it.
I was just thinking if this is something that is his mother born from this world, or is this world sort of like inside his head, considering his mother died in a fire, is her fire abilities connected with her death?
So,
if you catch me,
I hear your question. I have thoughts, but if anybody wants to go first, go ahead.
And I also, my thoughts are how the fantasy world works, because I was able to gather a very concrete understanding of everything that I'm not saying that it's right, but that's what I was able to walk away with a concrete understanding, but I don't want to jump into that first. So you go directly address what Isaac was saying.
Okay. It kind of comes down to how you interpret the dream world, right? Where it's referred to as like the people who exist there are dead. That's kind of what the synopsis at least kind of says. It's like Mahito goes to the land of the dead. So I think she doesn't have power. She's manifesting those because that's what Mahito needs in that moment, where it's like he needs to reconcile the fire that consumed his mother and took her away from him. So I think that she doesn't necessarily have powers. This, again, is kind of in his head, because I don't know how much of it is real. Like his aunt's there, and she's still stuck there as well, because she's also grieving, just like Mahito. And so it depends on how you interpret the metaphor, I guess, because it can go one way or the other, and I think that's very intentional.
Before I open my mouth, Isaac, do you have anything on what he just said?
No, I was just wondering what you guys think, sort of the whole thought and all.
There's a lot of birds in the films, I figured.
Okay. Jamie, any thoughts before Brandon goes on this massive rant?
I thought that she got fire powers in a way that, like, now, I guess kind of so Mahito can see that, I guess she regained control or, like, reclaimed, like, what was taken. Yeah, I guess.
So that, like, fire isn't evil, right?
Right. So it's like the fire, her fire didn't go out, I guess. So she is able to put out this not destructive force, but like a great light for Mahito instead.
I don't know what the scene was in Japanese because I watched it in dub, but their final moments, he's just like, "You're going to die in that fire," and she's just like, I've never been afraid of fire. If that's my destiny, that's just what it is. But I get to have you.
It's
and that's
pretty much the same.
Yeah, and so I think that's kind of the antithesis of that scene in that moment where it's like he had to get over one, a potential fear of fire he may have, and two, just the piece of letting it go. It kind of just plays into all of that of him resolving what happened with his mom.
All right.
So it all goes back to the Parrot King. No, I'm kidding. It has nothing to do with the parakeets, even though they were weird and flesh-eating.
They were so
flesh-eating parakeets.
I have a fear of birds, by the way, so this movie was hell.
Oh, really?
I am sorry. That is so bad. I'm so sorry.
It was awful. Like 2 hours.
It was like, I don't want to dream anymore. Take me back.
Nobody told me there were birds down here.
So here's what I think. Here's the idea. You ready? Here it comes. I got nothing. No, so there is a mythical genealogy in this film, right? His great-granduncle was a person that constructed a tower, right? We later find that he constructed a tower to encapsulate this magical rock from the sky or whatever, right?
Granduncle's voiced by Mark Hamill, by the way, and he crushed.
Which again, he's not the Heron. It's Robert Pattinson. Like I can't, you know what I mean? I gotta keep going back to that. So there's this genealogy there, right? Now you have that, and only the people from the great-granduncle's family can enter this world. That's why Mahito's mom can go there. That's why Mahito's stepmom / aunt can go in there. And that's why Mahito can go in there. His dad can't. He can't, right? So you have that, which is established not in order, but through little gaps here and there. The great-granduncle is who Mahito will become if he doesn't move on. That's why him staying in the dream world is an option. Because what he does in that world is create a world in the way that he wants it to be, where he has control. And part of the theme of the story is that you don't have control over life. Life happens. And you have to learn to continue moving on with it. Right? That's where the great-granduncle thing comes from.
which is a theme in a lot of Miyazaki films. That's why I think it's interesting that he revisits it here.
Yep. So his mom there is not an apparition of Mahito. It is his mom. Because the whole thing about the stone world, there is no time or space. Everything can inhabit at the same time. This is his experience getting lost in the world. There is a story that Mahito's mom once got lost for an entire year. And because there is no time and space, this is that version of his mom in the past that's meeting him in the future. Because there is no time and space. So this is not his dreamscape. Now, of course, everything that we're seeing fantasy related is, without a doubt, Miyazaki's fantastical way of presenting Mahito's inner mental and emotional conflict with grief. But within the lore of the movie, that is the reality of the fantasy world.
I get that. My thing is, if she legitimately has fire powers in this fantasy world, her dying by fire is stupid.
Maybe it got out of control.
Well, but no, but here's the other side of it.
It flared
up.
But here's the other side of it.
Here's the other side of it, right?
Yeah.
That everybody that leaves the world forgets about it. Forgets that this mystical thing happened and just remembers that they were able to deal with what was going on with their lives and they move on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, and I think it kind of also exemplifies the fact that it's not a switch that you can turn on or off when you're going through grief, when you're going through emotional distress. It's just that whenever your heart finds a way to move on, it becomes easier to manage. But now that it goes away, which makes you think, so you don't have to go through all these dreamscape like roller coasters again, because you found a way to deal with it, right? But yeah, it's I see all those little things there that drew my mind, that drew to my imagination, and I don't know. I think that's a lot of world building that occurs in very little details that make it enjoyable, but none of them are necessary to understand Mahito's journey, which I think is the brilliance of it. Like, all the little things are there if you want to go through it and try and get some logic behind it, but none of it is necessary because the story is just good. The presentation is just good. 110%. Yes.
Yes. Forget about the joke. Yes. That's terrifying. I do want to add, in an interview, somebody asked Miyazaki why he titled this movie How Do You Live? And his response was, I'm making this movie because I do not have the answer. Which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah. That's actually very interesting. Because can we walk away saying that we understand how Mahito was able to get better? Or do we simply just understand that he found a way, even though we can't put it into words?
Much like life, I would say.
Exactly. We have an emotional connection to the resolution, but it's not as simple as saying, oh, he manned up and accepted his new mother. You know, it's not as simple.
And he got to know her a little bit. Turns out she was pretty cool. So,
Yep. But I did find it interesting the fact that the figure of the great uncle is him in a world controlling everything.
you know, and Mahito chooses, I don't want to do this and control everything and forget everything else that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as someone that's gone through stuff in life, I know what it is to feel that you are going through something you can't control. And you feel that the only way to survive is to make that thing that makes you lose control go away. And sometimes that's not the way to live. Sometimes that's not even possible. Sometimes you're built a certain way, right? And the only way to have a better life is accepting things and yeah. learning to accept them and move forward. And that's actually the key to live again. And that's, you know, it's the beauty of art.
That's what I enjoy about that entire third act. Like we meet the Parakeet King, right? And he's having that same reaction of like, wait, so you've had control this entire time. He tries to like take control for himself. And it's like, that's, again, not a good way to live. And once he tries to take control, this works. Everything falls out of balance because that's just mm-hmm. not how it works. And I right. think that, again, through this entire metaphor salad of a movie,
metaphor salad.
Miyazaki found a way to make it work where it's like, okay, I get what you're trying to say. It took a long time. I got confused like 20 times to get here. But I see it. I see the vision. It works.
Welcome to this new episode of Metaphor Salad with Hayao Miyazaki, Mike Thomas. I'm sorry. I find that utterly hilarious.
Today's Mad Lib is...
Metaphor Salad. So how are you feeling about the weather today? I'm sorry, it's gonna get old quick, but I find it hilarious. Isaac, any more thoughts on this metaphor salad of a movie?
No, I don't.
What kind of dress?
I don't know. Honestly, the first one that came to mind was bernaise sauce, but that doesn't work for a salad.
Okay, Jamie, you can talk now.
Yeah. I mean, closing thoughts. I really enjoyed this. If for some reason someone is watching and you haven't seen it, why would you do this to yourself?
But also,
go see it.
Why? How do you live with yourself for not seeing a Miyazaki movie in theaters by now? Come on.
Yeah. Go see it for yourself.
Go enjoy this metaphor salad of a movie.
If you've seen
it already.
The
funny thing is, this movie is so interesting, so wonderful, so deep that even though they haven't seen it and we spoiled everything, they're still going to go see it and it'll be new for them.
Mm-hmm. They didn't even talk about this.
Isn't this movie about winning the box office spots in US, for example?
I mean, it's doing good. It's not doing bad.
I don't know.
Also, its only competition is Wonka, and Wonka's only been out for like 2 days, so it probably won last week. Well, Godzilla. It's in top three. Godzilla and Wonka are doing their thing right now.
Ghibli does good in the US, so... Mm-hmm. Oh, damn.
Ghibli's actually been at, like, I think every convention I've ever been to somehow. Except for one. There's always a Studio Ghibli booth somewhere.
There's a... did it cost more than Godzilla Minus One to make?
Highly likely that it did.
That one only cost $15 million. I can't believe that's real, though. That's wild.
Apparently, according to the director, he wished he had that amount of money.
It was paid for even less, apparently.
Dang.
I did a quick box office
check. It's a metaphor salad of a Godzilla.
Wonka's 1, Boy and Heron 2, Godzilla came in 3. Shout out to Japan for dominating the U.S. box office, by the way. That's insane.
Wait till Oppenheimer comes out.
Nihon.
That's going to be interesting. I really want to know what happens when it comes out over there. It's going to be an interesting reaction. Mm-hmm.
I just thought of something horrible. I will not say it because we are on air. So, anybody else got anything on The Boy and the Heron / How Do You Live? How do we?
I appreciate you adding the question mark because that is a part of the title. So whenever you say the name, it's How Do You Live? That's the title of the movie.
So it has two question marks?
Yeah.
Because the title has a question mark and the question.
I have no other thoughts on this movie. It's fantastic. Go see it if you somehow haven't. Watch it again because I think it'll make an even better experience the second time. Mm-hmm. And Miyazaki, get some rest. I know you're never going to retire, but just go on vacation. Live a little. That's kind of the
point,
right?
Do something with your life.
Okay? Yeah. I echo all of that.
Yes. Yes. You guys got anything else before we wrap up?
This is the last stream of the year, so it's been awesome. It's exciting. Anime with you all.
See you in 2024.
Yay. 2024 is going to be awesome. We got Bleach is coming back. My Hero Academia. Kaiju number 8. Jump Fest is doing a thing. We might get some more announcements. There's announcements I know of that I can't talk about on air. It's going to be fun. And One Piece.
Merry Christmas, Arc Winder. Happy Merry holidays.
Merry Christmas.
One Piece. New arc. January 6th. Let's go.
I have one thing to say, and it's my only regret of 2024. Viz?
You have a regret already? The year hasn't started.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
He already failed his New Year's resolution, I guess.
My New Year's resolution is as clear as a metaphor salad.
Isaac, he's killed this joke already. It's only been like 3 minutes.
Hey, man.
I know.
You have not said any puns today, so I'm taking over.
Oof. Traveler confirmed. what's your regret of 2023, sir?
So my regret... No. Viz. Okay? I'm trying to use your app. Damn it. I have Shonen Jump. I have Viz. Use Viz for two reasons. Psalm 100, Call of the Night. I've read till chapter 129, and I would like to keep reading it. But for some reason, chapters 130 to 139 are not available. And you keep putting chapters out, but you don't fill in the library chapters, so I can't read it. There's like 10 chapters that I have to read to be able to keep reading it. It's not available. This, please.
This is not a regret on your part. This is this. Get your crap together.
I like
it's a regret. You want to know why? Because I'm paying for it, but also because I feel that I have failed because I haven't read Call of the Night. I could have been caught up already. Damn it. I got caught up with One Piece in a month and a half. And I've been trying to get caught up with Call of the Night, and I can't.
That is impressive, man. That's crazy.
Damn it. By the way, One Piece is fire. Chapter 1101.
Yeah, I've got one final thought on Boy and the Heron before we close out. And this is something that bugged me the entire time in the movie. That kid just... Mahito just looks like Kawaki. He just looks like Kawaki, and it bugs me.
Yeah.
That was...
And Kawaki is a metaphor salad of...
Kawaki Uzumaki is something else. I will tell you that.
Did you say Kawaki Uzumaki? Stop it.
Is that not his name?
I don't know. I've never heard of this man. Never seen his name before.
We're going to be talking Boruto next year, guys, so they can understand these references. Okay.
I mean, is it a metaphor salad? I'm sorry.
Am I allowed to kick him out because this joke is getting old?
There you go. Guys, if you enjoyed this video, give us a like, subscribe.
Of course,
thank you
for joining us and for being awesome and for supporting us in this year as we continue to grow the Amateur Otaku Podcast. Next year, we're going to be crossing the 200 mark. Who knows? Ooh. It'll be awesome if we can reach 500 by the end of the year. It's possible. There's a lot of people that watch anime.
There are a lot of people that watch anime.
There is. Wow. There is. You guys are awesome. We appreciate your support and checking us out. You're on YouTube, on Twitter, and on TikTok. You guys stay awesome. Stay safe. Enjoy your Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate with your family and your loved ones. Enjoy the New Year's. Stay awesome. Be awesome. And keep watching anime, guys. Peace.
See you in 2024.
Bye.
Boom.